Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. What a week it's been. I hope you're well. I hope you're managing to keep your vibrations high. Sounds ridiculously woo-woo, but what else can we do right now? I hope you've managed to just stay grounded and calm. I think that's kind of got to be the message at the moment. We did a great afternoon last week, our Sound and Spirit Day. It just felt so precious to be able to have that time to share how we really felt and look at ways of trying to kind of boost our calmness and be able to kind of send the light out. You know, I really do sound woo-woo now, but you know what I mean. I do think it's important right now to remain positive. Otherwise, you kind of just go under, and that doesn't help anyone or any situations. So I hope you're doing okay at the moment. And if you're not, I'm just going to say right from the off, I normally say at the end of the podcast, but absolutely reach out if you're struggling right now. If you don't already have a community, find yourself one, or just reach out, just find someone who you can share what's going on with. Because I think when you hole up, that's when it gets really tough. So yeah, please reach out. You can always message me. And if you're in the early stages of ditching the booze, same again. Make sure that somebody knows. Doesn't have to be the person closest to you, but just reach out and tell someone who's been in the same situation as you, because it really makes such a massive difference. A couple of interesting news stories this week around booze. There was a piece. I think I picked it up in, I forget, one of the tabloids I saw it, about how even one glass of beer or wine can shrink your brain. So that was an inverted commas negative piece, which you don't often see. Quite interesting. I think you'll find it shrinks absolutely everything. It shrinks your world. It shrinks your wallet. Shrinks everything apart from maybe your belly. But there was that piece, and then there was another one. I don't have it in front of me, but again, quite a powerful piece about how, just a small amount of wine is harmful. It might have come from the same study, I'm not sure. How they kind of do one study and then they section it off into different angles. But at least some of this stuff is getting out there. There was also actually one other piece trying to say that it's perfectly fine, which of course is the one that I would have dived on years ago. Oh, thank goodness there's someone's talking sense. A glass of red wine is good for the heart and all of that absolute nonsense. We are looking forward to our Family Constellations Day, which comes up at the end of March. And I've mentioned it a few times. It's not an easy one to explain, but just check it out. Have a look at the page. Go to thesoberclub.com and click on events. And Family Constellations is just a completely wonderful way of just becoming more compassionate and open-hearted and just getting an understanding of family entanglements and limiting beliefs. And you may be thinking, well, I'm not really close to my family. Well, all the more reason to do Family Constellations. Not because having attended a workshop will mean that you suddenly play happy families. It's not like that at all. But it helps you get an understanding of who you are. One of our participants from the last one that we did gave a lovely testimonial. Again, I don't have it in front of me, but it was really lovely. She said, I've heard the phrase, I am enough. I've heard it so many times, not really understood it. And after doing the constellation, I finally understood I am enough. It really made that so much sense to her. So check it out. Talking of limiting beliefs and certainly repeating patterns, we're going to be talking about relationships today. It's something that I've wanted to cover in more depth on the podcast for ages. Because once people stop drinking, or when they're in the early stages of sort of thinking about this, starting to become aware of their own health and well-being, aware of how alcohol might be or drugs might be affecting them, relationships play a very big part, one way or another. They play a huge part, whether it's that people are worried about upsetting friends and family, whether it's that they're concerned they're going to lose their drinking buddy, if your partner, if all you ever do together is drink, you know, that's going to have a massive impact. Your relationship, you know, obviously with your kids, if you're in the stages of dating, it's a real thing. Do you tell people heads up, to give them a heads up that you're not drinking? And then, of course, there's the whole complexities of someone who's living with a partner who drinks too much. I've had clients who their partner is, really seriously over drinking, can't see it, you know, isn't ready to address it. And they're also drinking too much, almost to try and keep up with the partner. And it's a thoroughly miserable and difficult situation. And that brings in all of these really tricky kind of nuances of, if I stay with this person, am I enabling? You know, it's a huge topic. And then that, of course, leads into the whole thing of codependency. You know, am I actually okay on my own? Or is it that really, you know, we are codependent? It's there's a lot to look at. But I thought I would start by speaking with a real expert in this field. Sherry Gaber is a licensed psychotherapist, coach, and author of Love Smacked. And, you know, she talks about love addiction, romance and love addiction, as a real thing. People who are constantly searching or in search of the next kind of love high. And she's one of the world's leading experts on all of this, how you can break these patterns. As I mentioned, author of the best-selling book Love Smacked. She's been featured on all kinds of TV and press across the States. She was the editor of Recovery Today, and she featured me on one of their one of their editions of Recovery Today. So I've known her for a little while. But also, you know, Sherry has a personal reason for specialising in this area, both the addiction recovery process and, you know, the whole connection with relationships, because she was a romance and love addict. There's an awful lot to talk about. She's the perfect expert for this topic. And we cover, you know, a bunch of different things. Just before we get into that, then, just a reminder that, you know, Family Constellations is very linked to all of this. Actually addressing your own limiting beliefs, really finding out who you are, can massively make a difference in your own, in how you interact with others. And obviously feeling whole and feeling comfortable with who you are, rather than needing someone to fix you, as it were, is going to make a massive difference. So go to thesoberclub.com and click on events. And you can just also look at the show notes, of course. And we also have a Champneys self-care and sobriety retreat coming up the 2nd and 3rd of April. That's at Tring in Hertfordshire. The Family Constellations is also in Hertfordshire, by the way, at King's Langley. So check out those events. I just want to make sure that you know they're coming up. If a little voice is saying, I keep thinking about this, I really must do it, then book it. It would be amazing. And don't forget also, it's absolutely wonderful to connect with people who are, you know, on some kind of similar path of becoming aware and conscious of who they are. There's a real magic in meeting up with others. It was so wonderful last weekend, as I say, that we got to have that kind of circle. There were 12 of us, and it felt really special. I don't know if it's just that we've been, you know, it's felt like we've been away from human contact for such a long time. But it does really feel special when you actually do get to meet up in person. I know we do a lot of the online stuff as well, but there is something magical about seeing other people. So enjoy the interview. My guest is Sherry Gaber, who is a psychotherapist and the author of Love Smacked. And I've told you a whole bunch of other interesting stuff about Sherry. I've been trying to get to interview you, Sherry, for so long, and I'm so thrilled that we can finally connect. It's great to chat to you.
Great, Janie. And I know we did an interview for Recovery Today magazine quite a while ago.
Yeah. Yes, of course. You're part of that. Of course you are. I love the work that you do around, love addiction, of course, is a really interesting phrase that you use. Codependency, all of this stuff that you bring together. Just before we get into all the kind of pieces of all of this, you know, can you just tell me how a little bit about your background and just what led you to doing all of this really fascinating work?
Sure. So I started out working in recovery. I was married to an alcoholic. I was on Celebrity Rehab. And then later I edited that magazine, Recovery Today. And then I started realizing that everything I was focused on was on addiction and substance abuse. I sort of landed there, you know, accidentally. But I was the codependent. I was the love addict. And after my divorce from the alcoholic, after multiple relapses, I realized he was my obsession. He was my I was codependent on him. I was love addicted. And I'd been so in other relationships as well. And I finally kind of woke up and did some, you know, real deep work with a fantastic trauma therapist. And I started uncovering this whole thing around toxic relationships, love addiction, codependency. And from there, morphed my book, Love Smacked, and I started a podcast called The Love Fix, which I know you mentioned earlier, and it's just been fantastic because I'm really speaking from my heart, my story, and most of the work I do today. I did a lot with addictions for a long time. I've sort of changed that up a little bit and now really working in this other field.
Mm, yeah, well, it's great because, you know, as we all know, once people get past that kind of ditching the booze point, after that they're able to look at so many other things. And, you know, so often once that piece is gone, you know, I've had a lot of sober club members have kind of said to me, I'm actually feeling really wobbly now because I now realize it was only the alcohol that was holding my relationship together, and I'm now starting to see it from a different perspective. So, you know, so important the work that you're doing. So I have to ask then, let's nail it then. What is love addiction? What would be the signs? What would be the symptoms that you have love addiction?
So we would think of it sort of as obsessive love, but some of the other names would be it's a process addiction or a lifestyle addiction. It's not a substance addiction. Some people call it a soft addiction. So when you think of things like codependency, love addiction, or the internet, or gaming, or shopping, or debting, these are all like mood altering activities. And that's really what love addiction is. It's sort of this euphoric state, just like someone who would be using would have with their substance, only it's love. What we're, you know, we often say in the addiction world, you know, you're always chasing that first drug, that first, you know, alcohol drink. Mm-hmm. Love addiction, you're always chasing that first love, that first identification with, oh my God, this is like amazing. But what's interesting with substance abuse, just like you might have withdrawal or with heroin addiction, you know, when you're out of your drug and you're jonesing it, you want that drug. The same is going to occur when you have a breakup. You go through this whole withdrawal phase. You're just longing for that attachment and all those pleasurable feelings that that lost relationship had given you, just like the drug user craves his drug. You know, love addiction and codependency sort of overlap. You know, in the psychological world, they are two different. They're defined differently, but I'm going to kind of use them as how they overlap. So a love addict is often a codependent, but a codependent doesn't have to be a love addict. So for the codependency, you could be, you're basically trying to control people, places, and things, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's a love object. But love addiction is absolutely a love addict. Object, someone that, you know, you're romantic about, you're addicted to the high of the dating and the getting to know each other. And some of the codependency traits that would overlap that would be you adapt to what they want. You turn yourself into a pretzel because you want to be with them and you don't want to be alone. I mean, the idea of being abandoned or rejected or alone is just, it's absolutely debilitating. So you have no boundaries. You let anybody cross over your boundary. That's why you often will end up in these toxic relationships. You have just a excruciating fear of letting go, which is the same with really alcoholics who are fear of letting go of their alcohol or drug addicts in that case. You have a fear of the unknown. You're always trying to change people because you're in love with this fantasy. So you want them to be what you want them to be rather than who they really are. And you need them to feel whole. You feel this chronic emptiness, which again, you can relate to regular addiction or regular substance abuse addiction, where this emptiness, you need to fill up that hole with something. And in this case, it's love or a relationship. In my case, it was fearing abandonment. You know, if I was to go into my trauma story at all, I just had such fear of abandonment. And that was what led me to go from relationship to relationship to the relationship. And then we give up who we are. We turn ourselves into a pretzel just because we don't want to be alone.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, how would we know then if we're in a toxic relationship? Because, I mean, no relationship's perfect, is it? You know, and there'll be people thinking, well, I wonder where I fit into all of this, because my life isn't perfect. My relationship isn't perfect. The stuff I hate about it, you know, it isn't all rosy. But at what point does that cross over to become toxic?
Yeah, well, the reason I again put those two together, love addiction and toxic relationships, is because if you're so desperate to be in a relationship and you just are so afraid to be alone, you are going to be more apt to pick someone and anybody just to fill that void. And so that's why you often get into toxic relationships, because you just really have no preferences. You're not picky. You'll settle for whatever, you know, whoever will look at you. So some of the things that would, you know, define a toxic relationship is you're always ruminating about them. You're always obsessing about them. You give up a great part of who you are just to be with them. You want to spend every minute with them. You twist your personality and your values just to please them. You walk on eggshells. You know, you're always worried about what you're going to say and what you're not going to say. You're afraid to ask for something. You're afraid to tell them what's going on with your friends or your work, because you're always avoiding the trigger of a fight. Mm. And then you feel guilty for everything, because often with toxic people, they always have to be right. You're wrong. They're right. They point the finger back always at you. They blame you. So you're always feeling bad because they're always telling you that it's your fault. And if you already have sort of a shaky self-esteem and you kind of second guess yourself, you're going to believe that you are the problem. You fight constantly. So there's no calm or peace. It's not an easy breezy relationship. A lot of manipulation, a lot of control. A toxic partner feels that they have the right to tell you who to spend time with, how to dress, how to do your hair, what to do for a living, when to see a doctor, you know, what to have for lunch. They're just constantly in your face. A lot of yelling and insulting, a lot of criticizing, a lot of devaluing, and then often a lot of discarding. Physical injury, domestic violence. You know, I'm going to close the door, Jamie, because my dog is barking.
Okay, no worries. We'll just wait while you do that. It's great when we get the dogs joining in on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I was just going to say, it's so interesting when you describe all of that, because you literally are describing a relationship that I was in a long, long time ago. And I stayed in that situation far too long. Now, I know that that's very common, very, very common for women to stay in a completely toxic relationship, even though rationally they absolutely know that it's not okay. Even if there isn't physical abuse, in my case, it was verbal abuse, and everything that you've just described, it makes me go a bit cold, actually, when I kind of think, oh my goodness, somehow I stayed way too long. And that's very common, I know. What is that about? Is it simply that we don't value ourselves enough to feel that we can leave?
Well, you know, so this one thing I want to say, and the reason I do these interviews, is I want people to feel no shame or no blame. There are reasons you stay in these relationships. And when we get into the trauma piece, we can get a little more into why we stay. But one of the reasons is there's what we call a trauma bond that's created. So when you have somebody that's abusing you and sort of, you know, 1 minute love bombing you, telling you how wonderful you are, and then the next minute telling you you're a piece of shit and devaluing you and disrespecting you, there's this incongruence. And so it's like a roller coaster ride, and you don't know what to think. So you're always waiting for those, for them to throw you a bone. Then they do something that's abusive, and then they apologize, and then you get into the honeymoon phase, and then you're starting the cycle all over again. So there's just lack of instability, and that's their plan. They want to keep you off kilter. They want you to feel off kilter so that they can keep manipulating you and keep abusing you and keeping you sucked in. So that is one of the reasons that people stay in these. And of course, other reasons are low self-esteem. But I want people to know that if you have been in these relationships and it's been really hard for you to get out, there are reasons for it. And, you know, we'll get into the trauma piece, but never to feel ashamed about it, because exactly what they're doing. They are master manipulators, and they have very, very manipulative ways of keeping you in that relationship.
Yeah, I guess this is for both men and women. It goes both ways, right?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, there's something called love bombing where they sort of sweep you off your feet. They lavish you with gifts. They tell you all these wonderful things. They can't stop complimenting you. I had a guy last year tell me he was going to marry me on our first date. And, you know, here I am a therapist. I've done the work. I know all this information, and yet it kind of felt good. Mm. So sometimes you can be the healthiest person and still kind of get sucked in. I mean, they can say things like, oh, I love everything about you. I've never met anyone as perfect as you. You're the only person I want to spend time with you. They bombard you with phone calls and texts, and then they want your undivided attention. But, you know, we know true love doesn't want all our time and energy. We respect each other's other commitments and other, you know, we respect boundaries. And often know that you're in a toxic relationship when someone doesn't respect your boundaries. So, you know, if you're hearing things like, oh, we're born to be together, it's fate that we met, you understand me more than anyone, we're soulmates, you're probably being love bombed. And there's a really good chance, you know, there's a toxic person over there that you're connecting with. And so you want to be really, really leery. And if they do step over your boundaries, 100%, you're probably with a toxic person. But remember, love bombing feels good, because if you're a codependent or a love addict and you've had insecurity and you feel empty inside and you need outside validation to make you feel good, you're going to be more prone to that love bombing. You're going to buy into that love bombing because it just feels so good.
Yeah. I can absolutely see exactly how this plays out when people are dating or finding, you know, in the process of moving from one relationship to another, or they've had a breakup. But what about those people who have been, you know, like the kind of example I gave where, you know, I've had clients who have been with the same partner, they've perhaps been married and raised a family, you know, 40 years, perhaps, I mean, literally, absolutely forever. But when they change, when they start to actually value themselves, which often coincides with stopping drinking, of course, when they start to value themselves, they look at that relationship differently. So that in some ways, that's really difficult to unpick, isn't it? What's your view there on how people assess what's going on in a relationship that they might have put up with this nonsense for literally years?
Well, once they, you know, start working with a therapist and they start uncovering early trauma, and I, you know, maybe we should get into that a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, grow up in a family where there is, you're not getting your needs met, where you've been abused, you've been neglected, perhaps your parents were alcoholics, addicts themselves, they weren't there for you. In my case, I was premature. I was in an incubator for the first 3 months of my life. Now, some would say, well, oh, come on, you can't, that big deal. Like, so what? Get over it. Well, they know now that if you don't get that early bonding, that early nurturing, you know, you're going to be set up for really addictive sort of relationships later on, because you're always looking for that love and attention.
Yeah.
So really an attempt to recover the loss of an early childhood. So like if a child receives lots of love and nurturing and they feel secure, that person's going to grow up with a really good sense of themselves, and they're going to feel like a complete person, and they're going to be able to set healthy relationship boundaries because they're going to know who they are because they got that bonding early on with their parents, or they have that were available for them. But without this nurturing, a child develops poor self-esteem and insecurity. And then relationship addicts, they might have them had to have been caregivers who had parents who were unavailable physically or emotionally. Maybe their parents were divorced. They were too busy trying to make a living. They were single parents. They were neglected or abused. So some come from intact functional families, but never really fit in with their peers. And then you get into adolescence. And then the acceptance of our peers actually become more important than the acceptance of our parents. So there's all these different things that can happen in your lifeline. Like let's say you were bullied, then they're you want to be validated, you want to be seen, you want to be heard. So once you uncover and really find yourself a great trauma therapist, someone that really can work with you on this piece, that's early piece, you're going to see why you kept picking these people. And then, like you said, once you start uncovering all this and you see, oh my God, I can't believe I've been doing this all these years, then you know, you're gonna be coming from a much healthier space.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what about for people who feel that they really are in love? And I mean, how do we make that, how do we sort of notice the difference between being in love and actually having an unhealthy obsession with someone?
Yeah, well, the key to distinguish relationship addiction from the normal ups and downs of a relationship is really to look at the frequency or the severity of the ups and downs. So let's say you've got five really happy relationships and one happy one, you're not likely going to be a love addict. But if you're unhappy in every relationship and you feel even worse on your own, you have those abandonment issues, you're afraid to be alone, you feel empty, you need that constant validation, you're probably a love addict and you're probably, you know, in an unhealthy relationship.
Mm. And you cover that, I know, in Love Smacked. Tell us a bit about the book.
Okay, so the book was really just something that had been on my mind for years because I've had multiple marriages. And originally the book was called The Marriage Junkie, and I actually read I know. I thought it was a great title.
Great title. I love it.
And it was one, but I just felt like, you know, I want people that have just been in multiple relationships to not just marriage, you know, junkies really uncover, why do I keep doing this? Why do I keep going for a different face, different name, but the same relationship? So yeah, in the book, I break down, you know, what is codependency? What is love addiction? The whole trauma piece, how to love our inner child, learning how to ditch the desperation, learning not to settle. It's kind of a workbook book, you know, for anybody that may be struggling from a really difficult breakup, maybe someone who's trying to stop picking, you know, fix their picker, so to speak. And then anybody that, you know, just keeps picking the same type of people over and over again, and just not, like we say in the program, not getting the results they want.
And do you think the media portrays, you know, sort of obsessive relationships?
So I'm going to kind of age myself here, but I'm thinking of the movie Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, oh, of course, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Everybody remembers that. That was scary.
Obsessive love. And then, you know, and then there was one later on with Beyonce called Obsessed. That definitely was an example of an obsessive sort of love. But, you know, I think of my granddaughter, you know, she's got like all these princesses now, like all these Disney movies that have all these princesses, and all the princesses, even today, seem to have some sort of Prince Charming, you know, some sort of person that's going to save the day. And so I don't think much has changed since we were little girls, when it was Cinderella and Snow White. I mean, I really think that we're still, you know, we try to have superheroes for women and this, you know, Wonder Woman and all of that. But I think we're still, unfortunately, you know, talking about fairy tales with our little girls.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know you talk about withdrawal from a toxic or a love addicted relationship. What do you mean by that?
So you think about withdrawal from, let's say, drugs, and you know, it's so agonizing. You just feel so empty, obsessive. You're in panic, this sense of not knowing. You don't even know who you are. You're kind of in the ethers of nothingness because all of your value is based on being coupled up. So you never find love again. But the positive side of all that, Jamie, is that you can use it as an opportunity to become whole again. You know, withdrawal can be a time to really slow it down, meet your authentic, precious self you've been avoiding. It's just a great time for self-love and healing and healthier relationships. But unfortunately, most love addicts like myself didn't want to be alone. So I would have someone always on the back burner. And when I finally had my last divorce 10 years ago and had gone through so much trauma with his alcoholism, his alcoholism has nothing to do with my love addiction, but it did make me realize that my whole goal was to like save him. So I knew that, you know, I cannot get divorced again, and I will do whatever it takes. And it was just became an obsession. And that's when I finally said, you know what, I need some time out. I need time alone. I need, now is our early 50s. I need to just peel back these layers and find out what's going on. So I joined some really great groups, and I have a group myself now from this experience I had. And then I hired a great trauma therapist and was able to get through that withdrawal, but we have to get through it. And one thing we say to people that are with narcissists or toxic relationships, is we say you have to have a no contact. You've got to go no contact for 30 days.
Yeah.
To get sucked back in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a really difficult one, this, isn't it? With when someone is with, you know, with an alcoholic. Where is that line between compassion and enabling? Perhaps you absolutely still love them, but you can't live with them. Oh my goodness! I mean, so many layers there. It's such a complex thing. It must be very, very difficult to deal with.
Well, I remember, you know, the thing that I was always told and what I would tell clients is, you know, support their recovery, don't enable their disease. And that's
Yeah.
really great. And it sounds like a great thing you can read out of a book. But when you're in it, it's a whole lot different. And I will say this, if you have a child that's an alcoholic or addict, it's a whole different game. I mean, that's something completely different. But I would say this, just like with when alcohol or drugs, you know, make your lives unmanageable, I would say if your relationships are making your life unmanageable, if you are, you know, giving up who you are to be in a relationship, if you, I mean, I remember my daughter said to me once, so when I divorced my ex-alcoholic, I would still talk to him, and then I even took him back at one point. And my daughter would say, "You're talking to Scott again, aren't you?" It was almost like someone who knows that someone's drinking. She knew that I was already in
Right.
that thing with him again. You know,
Yeah,
that
that
trauma bond.
bond again. Yeah.
And so you know that if you keep getting into these like trauma bonds and you just can't get out, and it's unmanageable, then you really may be in a toxic or love addicted or codependent relationship.
Yeah. And where do narcissists fit into this? Because you know, let's face it, we meet some, right? And I guess, you know, sometimes we have to look at ourselves and say, where are these qualities?
Yeah, well, most alcoholics in their disease may be acting narcissistically. It doesn't mean that they're a full-blown narcissist, but you know, alcohol is an addiction. You know, your whole behavior changes. That
Yeah.
whole dog, Mr. Hyde, you're not your best self. So there's a really good chance you are acting in a narcissistic way. But if we're talking about full-blown narcissistic personality disorder, this is someone that completely lacks empathy. They cannot see point of view. They blame you for everything. They're always right. You can also be in a toxic relationship, and they may not be a full-blown narcissist, but they could have traits. So, you know, you just got to be careful labeling narcissists. There's a lot of noise out there. I have an Instagram feed called Codependency Curious, and I post a lot on narcissism and toxic relationships. But we all have to be really careful calling someone a narcissist, you know, because someone can have the traits. And, you know, really all narcissism means, and when you look at a codependent or love addict and a narcissist, and they find each other, they both abandonment issues, except they manifest different. The codependent needs to be needed, and the narcissist or narcissistic trait person has what we call a narcissistic supply need, and they need lots of attention, and they need whatever they need you. They need whatever you can give you. The codependent needs to be needed, and so they're a perfect magnet for each other. Like the
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I think I mean, you know, I've barely thought about my relationship from all those years ago. But when I just, you know, and I hear you describe this now, I think absolutely I at the time needed a father figure. I needed to feel loved and to feel, you know, parented as it were, because I hadn't had that really. And he needed absolutely, as you say, needed to be needed, needed to control every aspect of what was going on. So it's a pretty classic thing you that you suggest there. So I mean, obviously you've already alluded to the fact that, you know, finding the right therapist to work with so that we can really look at this trauma is going to be one very important factor in all of this.
Right, absolutely. You know, you want to start looking at every relationship that enters your life as an opportunity to heal and grow and become more self-aware. I mean, this is really how you overcome an addiction to a toxic relationship. And your focus has to shift from the outside in. You know, everything starts on the inside. You know, every relationship is manifested really on the universe brings it to us as a mirror of our relationship with ourselves. So if we keep attracting toxic relationships, or we continue to nurture our love addiction to them, it's probably because we have a toxic relationship with ourselves. And once you know, when we just have to kind of, you know, like you said, peel back the layers, be aware that healing an addictive or toxic love addicted relationship with ourselves, it doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. We have to accept and welcome the process. We have to welcome that it's a constant work in progress. It's a constant uncovering and resolving our limiting beliefs, our toxic childhood experiences, our conditioning. We have to start building a connection with our spiritual selves, our emotional selves, our cognitive selves, our physical selves. You know, this is all part of just reconditioning ourselves and becoming addicted to our healthy self, which, you know, for anyone listening, you already are whole, you're already resourceful, you're already valuable, you're already colorful, you're already vibrant, and you're already strong. You just have to pull those things out of you.
Absolutely. And I, you know, we spoke earlier as well about setting boundaries. Now, I know for a fact that when I was drinking, I had no idea what I used to hear about this phrase, you know, setting boundaries. And it just didn't mean anything. I thought that people that kind of set boundaries were just really mean. You know, I really did not have a good sense of how to do that. And I think that's, you know, as you say, that's such an important part of this, is how you set your own boundaries within a relationship.
Right. Well, you know, if you don't know who you are, if you grow up and you're invisible and you don't have the parenting that you need, the love and the nurturing and the bonding and all of that, you're going to feel very invisible. And if you're invisible, you don't know who you are. And if you don't know who you are, you don't know what your preferences are. And if you don't know what your preferences are, you're not going to know what your boundaries are. You're just going to be loosey-goosey. So yeah. It's so important to figure out, you know, what your boundaries are. But in terms of a narcissist or a toxic relationship, you don't have to justify, explain, or defend yourself to a narcissist. They use a lot of scrutiny, intimidation to make you second guess yourself. And you probably are, if you have a history of trauma, you are going to second guess yourself. So that's why you really want to get that trauma piece resolved. And this gives them a feeling of power and control. So part of boundary setting is the right to decide what to share with others. You know, the less you share, particularly personal information, the less a narcissist has to use against you. I mean, I know when I met that guy last year and he said he was going to marry me on the first date, he just wanted to pick my brain only to use it later against me. So really be careful in discerning what you share. You don't need to justify your thoughts or your feelings or your actions to an intrusive narcissist. And if a narcissist criticizes you, you can say things like, oh, I hear your opinion, I'll consider that. Or if they question you, you can say, I'm confident in my choices. Or if they demand an explanation, you can say, you know, that's really personal. We'll have to just agree to disagree. You know, leave when it doesn't feel healthy. You don't need anyone's permission to exit a destruction interaction. You know, you can look at your watch and say, oh, I have another appointment. Or you can have your cell phone as a prop and have somebody call you to check on you. And you can say, oh my God, I just got a call. I'm going to have to leave. You just don't need to be part of something that doesn't feel right to you. I mean, decide what you're going to tolerate and what you won't. A key component of setting healthy boundaries is knowing when to say no and doing so, and asking yourself, what are you willing to accept from others and what are you not? I mean, I luckily have done enough work that when I entered into this mini, like 1 month relationship last month, I knew this was not going to work and I was able to get out. But for some people, like you said earlier, it's much harder. So it's really important to understand, you know, what is my line in the sand? And if you can't accept, like if this person is abusive, let's say, and you just keep wanting them not to be abusive, but you know they're abusive, you have to just accept either I'm going to be with this guy who's nice sometimes and abusive sometimes, and I have to accept all of it, or I leave. It's not really that hard. It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But I know how hard it is. I mean, I know how hard it is, but you know, like we learn in all the 12-step programs, acceptance is key. And if you can't accept what's right in front of you, I mean, the person is most likely not going to change. Mm. They're just going to change. So only change.
Yeah. And then what about for the person, just finally, you know, what's the kindest way someone can leave a relationship that they've perhaps been in for years, that perhaps isn't, you know, necessarily toxic? Perhaps they've just grown out of each other. I mean, I've really noticed this with a few clients where one person has stopped drinking, you know, gathered up, you get more time on your hands, right? So they've found other interests. They're really growing. They're amazingly, you know, blossoming and changing, and they want to do all kinds of other things with their life. And the partner is just stuck, stagnating, not necessarily abusive in any way, but just isn't enough for them anymore. Really, there isn't enough.
Say if there's, as a licensed psychotherapist, I think if you know, if there's no abuse and there's no cheating and there's no more drug or alcohol abuse, it's always worth, if there's children, to maybe see a couples therapist, you know, at least kind of see if there's something else going on.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work and it's just time to move on, then you just do it with love and compassion, you know, love and compassion, a lot of that whole movement of conscious uncoupling.
Yeah. That was such a great phrase, wasn't it? They got so slagged off for that. Oh, what's her name? Gwyneth. But it's a great phrase. It really is.
It's actually coined by my very good friend, Catherine Wilbur Thomas. And it's,
was it?
Yeah. And she actually endorsed my book, which was really nice. But yeah, it's a great phrase and it does work. And just want to, you know, depart in the most loving and compassionate way you can. But, you know, again, I always say, if there isn't abuse, if there isn't a cheating and there isn't drug and alcohol abuse, it might be worth it if there's children to maybe one session just to kind of see if there's something maybe you missed.
Yeah, because sometimes it really is just that you've not been able to communicate what your needs are. I've heard divorce lawyers talk about this and talk about the fact that, you know, the amount of times that someone will say, I just can't stand one more day of her not putting the lid on the milk bottle or something ridiculous, but they've never communicated that.
You know, being a woman in my early 60s, I'm going to tell you the grass isn't always greener. I don't think you should ever put up with certain behaviors, like I said, abuse, addiction, or non-recovery addiction, or the other one, cheating. But, you know, it's a lot easier to get a divorce. It's a lot easier to leave than to actually try to work at something that might be really worth working at. And as we get older, I find in my 50s and 60s, there can be a much more deeper relationship that is based on things much deeper than what you felt when you were younger, you know, things that are just so much deeper. So, I listen, don't ever settle, you know, for less, of course, but, you know, give it the, you know, it's only fair to maybe give it an opportunity to see, you know, really going on.
Yeah, great. So let's just tell us a bit about your work then, Sherry, how people can find out more about what you do. I know about the book and I'll put the link to that. Tell us about your coaching program as well.
Okay, so I have a program. I'm offering it to your listeners for $1 trial. It's a group coaching program where I get on once a month. And then there's all kinds of audios and video lessons on all sorts of things related to codependency and love addiction and toxic relationships. And again, it's $1 for a week, and then it goes to $27 a month. And I also have a lot of expert interviews in there. It's just a treasure trove of content, and they can go at their own pace. And they can find that at wakeuprecovery.com/IG1. And if you want to put that in the show
notes. Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes. No worries. Yeah, that's the Wake Up Recovery program. Yeah. And you've also got an ebook about narcissistic partners.
Yes. So if you're questioning whether or not you are in a relationship with a narcissist or a toxic person, or are you a love addict, I have a free ebook and it's called Narcissistic Partners and Obsessive Love. And you can get that at sherrygaba.com/NP quiz. That's sherrygaba.com/NP quiz. And I'd love for that to be in the show notes as well. I mean,
yeah, sure. No worries. We'll put all this in. Sherry, I really appreciate your time. It's a fantastic work that you're doing. It's just so important that you're laying all this out there. Cause I think, you know, so many people, you know, it's not till they stop drinking that they look at this often, you know, they do settle for less for years.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So yeah, amazing work that you're doing. And I've also got a few clients who are dating, and it's been interesting to have some conversations with them about what they're afraid of. You know, sometimes they know that they're starting to notice now, well, actually I'm afraid of rejection. So if I, you know, if I choose that I really want to see this guy again and he doesn't want to see me, the rejection is going to be just more than I can bear, you know. So you hear all of these phrases. This work is just so important.
In the Wake Up Recovery and in my book about abandonment and rejection. Yeah. I mean, that is a huge issue. And also not trusting yourself. And I want to say, if you aren't trusting yourself, you've had a bad breakup or a few bad breakups, and now you're afraid to get out there. If you do the work, I promise you, 3 months, 6 months from now, you get a great trauma therapist like myself or someone else, you're gonna know. You're just gonna know. You're gonna be able to trust your judgment much, much better.
Yeah. And also, you know, you're going to feel so much better about yourself that even if you don't meet the right person, what, you know, you don't need someone else to fix you, right?
Yeah. And you might get, you know, you might fall off the wagon again, just like you do with alcohol or drugs. It happens. Okay. So if you end up in a relationship for a minute, like I did last year with this, you know, I'll just call him a creep. You just get back up again and you go, okay, all right. So I had to get bumped in the head one more time, you know, but I only stayed a little bit. So don't beat yourself up. That is my mission in life is don't, yeah. Nope.
Brilliant. Sherry Gaber, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So I'll make sure everything goes in the show notes for you. Don't forget thesoberclub.com/events. If you don't have a community, by the way, the Sober Club is, you know, though I say so myself, an amazing resource. It's a wonderful online community. And of course, we do events, but we do lots of stuff on Zoom. There is an online course included, Get the Buzz Without the Booze. There's a huge amount of inspiration and content in the member portal as well as the online course. And it really is for whatever stage you are, because perhaps you're day one sober curious, in which case there's a ton of resources and support there for you. Maybe you've been sober for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, and now you're looking at other aspects of health and well-being, and that's what we cover. And it really is the holistic picture, but underpinned by sobriety. And so we do have just the most amazing supportive members, and it's not huge. Some of the groups that you may have come across, you know, have been going a long time. They're absolutely massive. And if that's what you're looking for, you know, there are lots of them, but this is much, much smaller. I'm in our private Facebook group every single day, many times a day. And it's very small. You know, everybody is seen. If you want to be seen, you're seen, but you can just lurk, of course. So check it out if it resonates. You know, maybe it isn't for you. Perhaps another group is for you. It doesn't matter, but do get yourself connected. It honestly is so important to have that connection. You know, whatever stage you're at in terms of relationship, all the stuff we've been talking about with Sherry, whether you're in a relationship or not in a relationship, you'll always be in a relationship with yourself. And, you know, just getting to know a little bit more about who you are, being willing to share sometimes your most vulnerable side and support others, that's a great thing to be part of in a community. And, you know, we've all been through the same stuff. We've all known how difficult it is to get out of the alcohol trap. Pretty much everyone in the Sober Club would class themselves as a grey area drinker, so not completely at rock bottom. But drinking, you know, more than we ever wanted to. And now focusing on that positivity, because, of course, that's my whole raison d'etre in life, is trying to encourage people towards that positive approach to sobriety. Let's not focus on what we're giving up. We're not giving up anything at all. Let's only focus on all the amazing things we'll be gaining, on all of the benefits. You know, over time, we're not daft enough to say it'll all come in the first week. Life's not quite like that. But let's take the positive approach to actually getting to know who we really are, you know, without the toxic liquid. I will see you same time next week. Make sure you connect with me on social media at Janie Lee Grace, hashtag The Sober Club, and I'll see you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.